We therefore resolve that any measure intended to deport Negroes from the United States seems to us a new route to perpetual bondage.
The idea of sending people to Africa who had lived in this country for 200 years was fantastic. Yes, but as late as 1939, Senator Bilbo of Mississippi introduced a bill to colonize Negroes in Africa. But Negroes long ago had tied their destiny to that of this nation. Come what may, we're determined to carve out our future on American soil. For we have an abiding faith in the eventual rightness of things. Though Negroes do not enjoy all the privileges, they have accepted the responsibility of citizenship with grave sincerity. Today, in spite of all sorts of outrages, 1 million Negroes are serving in the armed forces. Not so long ago, just last month as a matter of fact, a Negro soldier entered a hotel in Virginia.
Bellhop.
You waiting for somebody, soldier?
Yes, Sergeant.
Don't you know you don't belong here?
What do you mean?
No colored in this hotel, and that means you.
But I was sent here to play the piano for a war bond rally that's being held upstairs.
Well, you're still in Virginia.
But, Sergeant...
No back talk.
I was just telling you that...
Oh, a nasty guy, huh? Drag him out, Joe.
A number of people standing about the hotel witnessed this bit of Americana without lifting a protesting voice. That young chap spent the night in jail, nursing a pretty sore head. And not until his commanding officer discovered his absence next morning and investigated was he released. Japan would have liked to have had that story. As a matter of fact, Japan has used stories like that in the past. They shout them to the world by shortwave. Such incidents hardly serve to bolster the morale of Negro soldiers or their anxious families, or for that matter, the morale of white men fighting for liberty, justice, and democracy for all. The treatment of the Negro soldiers is propaganda meat for the Japanese, who are trying to persuade the dark races of the world that Japan is fighting a war to liberate the oppressed colored peoples. To Berlin, racial conflicts are useful exhibits to hold before the world as proof that America is a nation divided. Right after that bad night, our soldier friend was transferred to New Jersey, where one evening, he and several of his friends were ejected from a motion picture house because, well, as the manager expressed it...
Negroes are only allowed up in the peanut gallery, and that's jammed, so you can't get in here.
Naturally, they protested, but were promptly arrested for disturbing the peace and handed over to the military police. When they were returned to camp, they were brought before their white commander. 2 hours later, the theater manager received a visitor.
Did you want to see me, Major?
Yes. About those three men.
Oh, those colored fellows.
Sir, do you realize that those men are members of the United States Army and entitled to equal treatment?
Oh, but, sir, the white patrons...
They are about to offer up their lives so that you can own this theater and make it possible for your patrons, white and black, to come here as free people.
But, sir,
But nothing. If we hear of this outrage again, we'll declare your theater out of bounds. And in that case, neither white nor Negro soldiers will attend. Let's practice a little of the democracy we're talking about.
There's not enough of this kind of forthright action from right-thinking people. Very often, Negroes become discouraged. And today, the Negro's attitude is especially important if we're to have a total population waging a total war. Now, well, here's a story that explains what's going on in the minds of some Negroes. A group of rural Negroes was seated on a cabin porch somewhere in the South.
Yeah? Well, I ain't going to be no Uncle Tom, bowing and scraping and all that.
Well, maybe not, but you got to be mighty careful with those white folks. They's mighty sensitive.
Huh. I ain't doing no weeping about that being sensitive.
An old woman, anxious perhaps to save these young folks trouble, said,
"You young folks is always a complaining. You're always running your mouth out what you like and what you don't like and what you're going to take and what you ain't going to take from the white folks. We old folks got along all right, didn't we, Pappy?"
As I sees it, chillen, when an old Negro was insulted, he shed tears. But when these young'uns is insulted, they stand up and fight for their rights.
If the Negro enjoys democracy, all sections of the populations will enjoy it. For the Negro is the barometer of democracy in America. Today, a growing number of people believe this. They are courageously bringing the weight of their numbers and influence to the cause of democracy. They earnestly labor for a new world. The reassurance that such groups are active is found in the Citywide Citizens Committee for Harlem, the sponsors of this program. A prominent representative of that organization, Mrs. Dorothy Norman, well-known newspaper columnist of the New York Post, is in the studio with us. We'll ask her to say a word about the Citywide Citizens Committee. Mrs. Norman?
Thank you, Mr. Lee. Our committee, whose members act as individuals rather than as representatives of other organizations, is an interracial, interfaith group working for racial justice in Greater New York. Its members are drawn from a wide range of professions and interests.
Your organization's sponsorship of this series, Mrs. Norman, seems to me a most effective means of creating goodwill and greater understanding between the races.
That's true, and it is our hope, Mr. Lee, that these programs will serve to promote better race relations, because ultimately, our aim is to help create a living democracy in which all sections of the population will share in the rights as well as the responsibilities of citizenship. All those who listen are part of this program, for we will all reap the benefits of the new world that we must build only as we take responsibility for creating it. Today's program sets the stage for what will follow. There's a wealth of dramatic material that has never before been presented to the public. WMCA should be congratulated in helping the Citywide Citizens Committee for Harlem to share the material that Mr. Otley has so lovingly gathered and transfigured into living form in his book. But we as citizens will betray everything we are fighting for if we do not very specifically help the new world to be born. Better housing, education, health, employment, security, civil rights, these must not only be dreams. If we believe in democracy, we must believe in making them available for all, without regard to race, creed, or color.
Oh, thank you, Mrs. Norman. Now may I present the author of The World A-Coming, Roy Otley. Mr. Otley.
Mrs. Norman, Mr. Lee, ladies and gentlemen, the most important task before the American people today is winning the war and winning the peace. We present these shows in the hope that they will prove to be effective contributions toward establishing better race relations so that all peoples will unite and work towards winning the war and eventually the peace. We hope, too, that these programs will be as entertaining as well as they are informative. Today, people have their eyes lifted to the hills, hoping for that better world to come. Mr. Lee is about to tell us a final incident, which, when I heard it, certainly gave me a lift, for it seemed to point the way.
State employment offices, a Negro who had graduated from one of the finest universities in the country was being interviewed for a job.
Name?
John Jones. Address? 130 West, 135th Street, near Lenox Avenue.
Occupation?
Chemist.
Any experience?
Well, I taught chemistry for 10 years. I have experimented quite a bit and have also written several articles for scientific journals. I have a few here. I hear there is a great need for chemists. If I could get work in my field, I'd be able to help a bit to forward the war effort. I think I could be most useful doing the job I know best.
Yes, yes, Mr. Jones, there's a need for people like you, but some firms are pretty difficult about employing Negroes.
Yeah, but this is war.
Yes, this is wartime, but still, some people don't seem to face it. Look, Mr. Jones, suppose we give this a try. Just this morning, I received this request for a chemist.
Next morning, Mr. Jones appeared at a chemical laboratory in Utica, New York. While Jones waited in the outside office, the plant owner was arguing with his personnel manager.
But I didn't know he was a Negro.
Neither did I until he showed up.
Well, what are we going to do? You think of something.
I don't know as much we can do. We agreed to hire a man from the State Employment Service.
But we haven't had a Negro here before. Who knows? No, it'll happen among our own men out there.
Yes, I thought of that, but what can we do?
Yeah, well, I know what. Well, Miss Alice, get me the man we do business with at the New York State Employment Office. Yes, yes, that's right. This is the darndest thing I ever met up with. If they'd only told me that he was a Negro, I could have told them not to send him.
Well, maybe there's no one else available. There's a terrific shortage of manpower these days.
I know all that. Now, look. About this man you sent us. Yes, yes, we're desperate for chemists, but he's a Negro. Yes, I know, but couldn't you send me somebody else? Yeah. He's a nice-looking guy. He's neat and all that, but, well, you see, my employees, they aren't used to seeing Negroes doing anything but janitor work. But they'll quit. Okay, then. I'll give it a try, but I know it won't work. Goodbye. He says it's the law.
Yes, Mr. Connors. Firms working on war contracts have to employ anyone who can do the job.
Okay. Send that Jones fellow in.
Jones went to work that same morning in the chemical laboratory. The first skilled Negro this firm had ever hired. The other employees went about their work without any comments to the plant owner. 3 months later, the plant owner was saying to the state employment man,
"Hey, listen, that man's terrific. Why, only this morning I gave him a promotion and I raised his pay. Have you got any more like him?"
Today in that plant, employing thousands of war workers, Mr. Jones is the chief chemist. Essentially, the masses of Negroes know that their problem is fundamentally an economic one. This belief accounts for the depth of passion that underlie their hopes and sacrifices for the new world a coming. They want the for white signs only torn from American jobs. We believe it can be done. Don't you?
You have been listening to the inaugural performance of New World a Coming, a new series of programs devoted to the Negro's contributions to American life. Featured on today's broadcast was Mr. Canada Lee, well-known American actor. We invite you to be with us next Sunday at 3:03, when Mr. Lee will again appear as narrator, and New World a Coming will have as its guest the star of Carmen Jones, Miss Muriel Smith. New World A Coming is written by Roy Otley and is based upon Mr. Otley's book by the same name. The program is produced and directed by Mitchell Grayson. John Velasco assisted. Music was arranged and conducted by John Gart. The theme song was composed by Duke Ellington. This was a public service feature of WMCA.